Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining our Q3 2021 results presentation. Before we start, I would like to draw your attention to our forward-looking statement on page two. With this, let me hand over to our CEO, Andreas Nauen. Andreas?
Yeah, good morning, and thank you for joining the call today. As you know, we presented the preliminary results for the third quarter and the updated guidance for fiscal year 2021 already on July 14th. Today, we will present the full results for Siemens Gamesa for that period and of course, also for the first nine months of fiscal year 2021. I'm joined as usual by our CFO, Beatriz Puente. We will provide you with an overview of the results for the third quarter of that year, and then we of course, will be very happy to take your questions. As you know, and we will explain now in detail, our Q3 results have been impacted by the significant increase in the price of raw materials and the higher than expected ramp-up cost of our new Siemens Gamesa 5.X platform. Nevertheless, onshore continues on its turnaround plan, while offshore has been affected by the market volatility in Q3 that also had an impact on service performance. I would suggest we start on page four with the key points for the third quarter and the first nine months of financial year 2021. The revenue of about 7.3 billion in the first nine months, with an EBIT margin of 1.1% versus -5.6% in Q3. As we explained already in the preliminary results call, Q3 was impacted by raw material price increases and the high ramp-up cost of the 5.X platform that has led to provisions for onerous contracts of nearly 230 million. We've already put in place different actions, such as indexation to protect from raw material price volatility. We've also increased hedging and back-to-back coverage with suppliers, and we have also increased our efforts on cost-out programs, aiming at reducing the impact of the material price hikes and ramp-up costs, specifically in Brazil. Our LEAP program is progressing well and is also helping to improve our performance. Our new EBIT margin guidance of -1% to 0% with revenue of 10.2 billion includes the provision mentioned earlier. Also, the pressure on supply cost, the ramp-up of our 11-MW turbine in offshore, and the service margin normalization will have an impact on Q4. Our order backlog of more than 32 billion shows we are well-positioned to take advantage of the strong momentum in renewables with 17 GW of offshore auctions in 2021 and 61 GW in the coming years to come. On page five, I would like to address a few activities under the banner of One SGRE that I mentioned also at the Capital Market Day that will help us to reach sustainable profitability. We have come with more than 500 ideas to reduce blade cost in an activity that we called business unit conventions or blade conventions, with around 120 experts from different company departments, so from off and onshore, to see how we can reduce blade cost. Another activity to make sure that we harvest the knowledge that we have in Siemens Gamesa is also a simplification of our quality and HSE organization with a clear focus on customer interfaces. We also continue to deliver strong in digitalization with improvements in areas like blade manufacturing or tower selection for onshore projects, amongst other things. On page six, you can also see that in Q3, we had good examples of significant achievements in our commercial activity with regards to project execution and service as well. We've signed the first orders for our next generation turbine in India, the 3.4-145, that we already announced last year. It shows that we have success of this next generation wind turbine in an important country like India. In project execution in offshore, we've continued to perform at excellent levels. We've completed the 600-MW Kriegers Flak installation in Denmark ahead of schedule. Also in service, we've signed 20-year service contracts for five different on and nearshore projects in Vietnam. On page 7, you can see that the results of our strengthening of our ESG policies also pays off. We've, as the first wind turbine manufacturer, received an excellent rating from Standard & Poor's with a score of 84 out of 100. That is the highest ESG rating that any of us has ever achieved. We also continue to be in the top percentile of ESG rating agencies of Sustainalytics or S&P corporate sustainability assessments. On page 9, we can have a look at the commercial activity for the third quarter. We maintain a very high order backlog of more than 32 billion, 3% higher year on year, with an order intake of 1.5 billion, of course impacted by offshore, where we expect to get more orders in Q4. Thanks to this backlog, we have now reached 100% coverage of this financial year revenue guidance, and around 80% of this order backlog is related to markets where execution is strong and growth prospects are above average. The standard volatility in the offshore market has resulted in a small order intake for Q3 in offshore, but as I already said, we expect more orders in Q4 to come. If we look at the chart on the right side where you see the regional distribution, we can see that the EMEA region consolidates its position as the main driver of the order backlog with a growth of more than 2 billion in Q3. As you can see on page 10, in onshore we continue to focus on profitability over volume in the third quarter. Still, we see a 12% growth in the order intake in Q3, up from 1.35 billion, thanks to the recovery from the negative impact that COVID had on the same quarter last year. Americas and APAC are the main drivers of the onshore commercial activity in Q3, specifically with orders in Canada, in Japan, and the Philippines. And I mentioned already the 300 megawatt order that we received in India, but this will be assigned to the fourth quarter. Again, the trend to larger turbines continues, and the 4-megawatt and bigger turbines account for 67% of all orders. The commercial activity for the 5X platform was stepped down in Q3 as a consequence of the measures to minimize the impact of commodity prices and the platform cost program. Still, orders taken for the Siemens Gamesa 5X platform since its launch total to 2.7 gigawatts, almost 2 gigawatt more than in the previous quarter. Pricing continues to be stable, with variations on the average selling price. Increase in prices and the positive country contribution in APAC and EMEA regions were offset by the negative impact of smaller project scopes and a moderate currency effect, amongst others. On page 11, you can see the current situation in the offshore market. In offshore, we maintain our leadership despite a decrease in order intake, but with 7.3 gigawatts in order backlog and another 7.8 gigawatts in the pipeline with projects in the US, in Europe, and in Asia, we see ourselves well positioned. The low order intake in Q3 was also impacted, as I mentioned also during the Q2 results presentation, by the early signature of the SOFIA project, a 1400 megawatt project in the UK ahead of schedule. But also in Q3, we landed two preferred supply agreements in Taiwan for 230 megawatts for Hai Long B and 512 for Hai Long 3. And this, together with the original Hai Long A project, another 300 megawatt, we will have another 1,000 megawatt in Taiwan, and this project will be equipped with a 14-megawatt 222 direct-drive turbine. The total order intake and the pipeline for our latest turbine, the 14-megawatt 222, now accounts for more than 5 gigawatts. On page 12, I would like to say a few words about our service business, which now accounts for about half of the total group backlog with more than 16 billion. Nearly 7.5% higher than a year ago, which is also thanks to the strength of our offshore order intake. We continue to have a very high retention rate of nearly 70% in Q3. The order intake was, of course, also affected by the offshore market volatility, but also the comparison to the previous year reflects a strong service activity in Q3 related to offshore orders. On page 13, we can have a look at the overall market dynamics. In the last year, we've seen governments and companies and non-profit entities across the globe announcing plans to step up their emission reduction targets. At the same time, measures aimed at mitigating climate change play a central role in the economic recovery over the short term and a sustainable growth in the long term. Renewable energy plays a key role in order to achieve those targets. As shown in this slide, wind installations would reach 145 gigawatt per year in 2030 in a sustainable development scenario. The IEA increased that figure to nearly 400 gigawatts in 2030 in the updated scenario that they issued a few months ago. And also in Q3, several countries stepped up their emission reduction goals. Europe, with the Fit for 55 package published 2 weeks ago, increased targets for renewables to 40% by 2030. Germany pulled forward the target year for climate neutrality to 2045 by 5 years. The UK stepped up its emission reduction targets to 78% for 2035 and 68% already by 2030. The US also announced offshore targets to reach more than 38 gigawatts and also a target reduction of 50 to 52% by 2030 versus 2005 in emissions. And also Japan is the first country in Asia to legislate its decarbonization target for 2050 and already nearly 50% by 2030. So overall and globally, we see a continued and ever-rising momentum in our market. As you can see on page 14, this translates into large auctions, which are a good example of the institutional support for the development of the wind power industry. This is clear in the offshore market as shown on the slides. The 17 gigawatt auctions expected this year and the additional 61 beyond that time support mid and long-term prospects for the wind industry, which are very positive diversification as we can see projects in Europe, Asia and the US. And with that, I would like to hand over to you, Beatrice, to have a closer look at the financials.
Thank you, Andrea. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining our Q3 results today. On page 16, we have the summary of the group financial performance and the third quarter that, as you see, are in line with the pre-announcement that we did on July 14th. Revenues for the first 9 months reached 7.3 billion euros, up 11% year-on-year, with 2.7 billion euros in the third quarter. Also, roughly, the increase is 12% versus last quarter. Revenue growth has been supported by both offshore and service, with onshore revenues picking up on Q3. We'll go on more detail on next slide. Moving to profitability, the 9 months EBIT pre-PPA and integration and restructuring cost amounted to 81 million euros, up 345 million euros from comparing with 9 months last year, EBIT margin of 1.1% over revenue, and with the third quarter, as you have seen, and we announced negative EBIT of minus 151 million euros. The third quarter and the 9 months profitability had been heavily impacted by the provision that we allocate for the onerous contract, mainly in Brazil, amounted to 229 million euros. This provision, as we explained in the pre-release communication, reflect mainly two impacts that has hit our profitability on our WTE order backlog that is mainly related to the longer time and higher ramp-up cost that we have for the 5X, as I said, especially in Brazil, and also the sharp increase that we have seen of raw material prices. Both events have been certainly compounded by the pandemic situation due to the supply chain shortfall and also execution-related bottlenecks that we experience and we suffer in Brazil. It's worth highlighting here that both our offshore and service activities continue to perform very strong, despite the market conditions. Regarding integration and restructuring costs, the amount for the period year-to-date, you know, is 149 million euros. The net interest spend has gone down in Q3 from 11 million euros to 9 million euros, and also in the nine-month period amounted to 32 million euros, down 27%. Tax expense on the nine-month period amounted to 91 million euros, 71 million euros in the quarter. Despite the negative profitability, the tax calculation is impacted by the geographical business mix, and also that we have not proceeded with any capitalization of the net operating losses in some of the countries. Reported net income amounted to a loss of 368 million euros in the first 9 months, and a loss of 314 million euros in the quarter. Both after pre-PPA and integration restructuring cost, net of taxes, amounted to 232 million euros in the first 9 months of the year. Moving to the balance sheet and the key cash flow metrics, CapEx in the third quarter amounted to 163 million euros and a total for the nine-month period of 452 million euros. It's important to highlight that more than 50% of the CapEx has been invested in offshore, and also for us it's very important, as you saw, because it will give us great opportunities to tap the market growth and maintain our current, you know, market leadership. Working capital equivalent in the period to negative 16% of the last 12 months on a revenue basis, and remains a very effective level despite that, the increase that we have seen at the beginning of the year. I will cover the group net financial debt that we closed as of the end of June, roughly net financial position, net debt position as we reported, 838 million euros, and I will cover later on the presentation the performance. Moving to page 17 of the presentation, you have full breakdown of the group revenue, growth of 11% on the first 9 months, supported by offshore and service, and also, as I mentioned, important to highlight the pickup in onshore activity and service in the period. At a constant FX rate, the group revenue will have grown 15% in the nine-month period to 7.6 billion euros. Most of the currency impact took place in the first 6 months of the year, and as we highlighted, mainly due to the depreciation of the U.S. dollar, and also we were impacted by the Brazilian real, followed by other currencies with less impact as Indian rupee and the Russian ruble. Moving to the left hand of the chart, we can see the group revenue performance by activity. Starting with service, the nine-month service revenue reached 1.3 billion euros, up 11% year-on-year, including the integration of the acquired European service operations of Senbium. Service growth was supported by a good performance in the fleet under maintenance that grew 8% year-on-year. During Q3 21, the renewal rate reached 78%, while in Q1 and Q2, that rate was roughly on the same range, above 80%. All, as I said, you know, before, very strong performance in the service segment. Regarding offshore, total revenue amounted to 2.4 billion euros during the first 9 months of the period. That is roughly an increase of 23% year-on-year. And the main driver of the has been a very strong, you know, growth on the third quarter. Its revenue slowed down to 6%, reaching 851 million euros. I will also highlight that, as Andrea has mentioned, a strong performance of some of the projects that we have, like the one in Denmark, where we installed and commissioned the project nearly 1 month in advance. In Q4, as we highlighted also in the previous quarter, we will see manufacturing activity in offshore slowing down year on year, and of course quarter on quarter, due to the ramp up of the manufacturing of the 11200 turbine. That also, of course, it will have some impact on the profitability of the WTG division in fourth quarter, as we announced in the previous, you know, quarter. Moving to onshore, the 9 month revenues reached 3.5 billion euros, up 4% year-on-year, with the revenues in the quarter of 1.3 billion euros. This is in line with a back-end, as we highlighted, back-end loaded activity, as also is driven by also our customer request. In Q3, onshore becomes the largest driver of the growth, if you see, in the period. The increasing contribution of the APAC region and also the negative impact of the FX explain also the difference between the onshore sales that grew less and the sales volume. Also moving to page 18 on the profitability side, EBIT, pre-PPA and integration restructuring cost for the 9 months, as we highlighted, are completely aligned with the numbers that we announced on July 14th, and was heavily impacted by the provision, onerous provisions that we allocate of 229 million euros. That's roughly 8.5% of the revenues of Q3. Also, it's important that despite that impact, the strength of the service and the very good performance of the offshore, you know, segment for us. As I explained, the main impacts of that, you know, hit or allocation of the onerous provisions were related to the increase in the wrap-up cost for the 5X, mainly for these projects in Brazil, and also the fast increase in the raw materials, mainly especially steel and copper. Also, the requirement that we have in Brazil for the local content, and also the issues that we faced on the supply chain shortfalls and execution has also, of course, compounded the effect. Which is important to highlight, as Andrea has highlighted, we have taken actions, of course, to mitigate that impact, and also in every single, you know, area, of course, you know, in Brazil, are reinforcing, you know, the resources and also specific action plan to mitigate, you know, the risk that we have there and has driven this onerous provision, and also looking for opportunities on the execution of those projects. When we look at the profitability and the annual, you know, evolution beyond the impact of the onerous provision, that we have also on the third quarter was concentrated, the underlying drivers of the profitability stays. Sales volume and productivity gains from LEAP also has had a positive impact, and also the strength of the offshore and service business. If we move to the balance sheet and also thinking about, you know, the fourth quarter imply on our guidance, I will highlight also it's important that the service, you know, performance has been very strong on the 9 months of the period. It's front-ended, you know, and that's the reason also of the higher margin that we see on that period. We foresee that service will finalize the year around, you know, 20% margin. And also, as I mentioned, the offshore segment will be affected by the ramp-up and the change of the platform on Q4. Moving to slide 19 and focusing on a key metric for us, which is the net debt of the group, I will highlight that we closed, you know, June with a net debt position of 838 million euros, increase versus last, you know, year for the same period, mainly related to the effort that the group is making on the CAPEX and, of course, investing for the future. As I mentioned, 50% of the CAPEX is allocated to offshore. Also, the working capital figures are affected by also lower order intake and therefore, you know, lower down payments that we have on Q3. And also, as we highlight and disclose, the increase on the lease and liabilities that has increased in the period compared to last year, 211 million euros, which is mainly some of the leases are related to new vessels. Consider taking into account, it's important to highlight that all the impact of the onerous provisions, as those are projects that are going to be installed in 22 and 23, that will have a cash impact on the coming year. Finally, also in the period, we have roughly used 60 million euros of Adwen provisions. And also the increase on the gross debt of 569 million euros are mainly related to what I explained, the increase in lease liabilities. And also, we fully withdraw the EIB loan that we signed in February, which has helped us, as you have seen, also to optimize the financing cost. Moving to slide 19, the only thing that I will add here is that the group retained a very solid funding position. It's very important. We have 4.4 in credit lines and loans, nearly two-thirds are long-term, and we have drawn roughly 1.4, but also we have cash in the balance sheet of roughly the same amount, so we maintain roughly 4.4 billion in available liquidity. It's important to highlight, as I mentioned, the long tenure of that maturity, that we don't face any significant maturities in the short term, and also that roughly 2 billion of the liquidity is long-term available and is available till 26. So now, as I highlighted, with a very strong liquidity and a very strong, you know, balance sheet, that is for us is a key competitive advantage to tap the growth of the market. And now let me pass on to Andreas, and then I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Beatrice. And if we go to page 22, we would like to share with you again the strong potential of wind energy in the coming years. And we believe that we are very well positioned to benefit from that steady market growth. As we can see, of course, 2020 with 116 gigawatts was a peak year, mainly driven by the Chinese and the US markets. And the years 21 to 24 will be relatively stable if you look at the total installations. Nevertheless, there's, of course, the underlying growth in the offshore market, very important for us. And then you can see that from 25 onwards, the market really excels. The growth of the global installations will resume in 2024 and 2025, and we will maintain that trend and even speed up that trend during the second half of the decade. Offshore installations will go through a significant increase from 2025, and we will reach 20 gigawatts or even close to 40 gigawatts by 2030. I would like to close off on page 23, and as indicated earlier today and during the presentation of the preliminary results 2 weeks ago, our new revenue and EBIT guidance reflects the impact of provisions for onerous projects. Also, Beatrice mentioned that in her part. These projects have, of course, been affected by the well-known raw material price increases and the increased estimates for the ramp-up costs for the 5X, especially for a number of Brazilian projects. The impact of these elements has been exacerbated by the pandemic, especially in Brazil, where the company faces supply chain shortfalls and execution-related bottlenecks. And also, as Beatrice mentioned, also Q4 will be impacted by the ramp-up and switchover of the offshore production by increased procurement cost and the normalization of the profitability in service, still always in the range where we expect it to be. As a result, our revenue for the fiscal year is expected to be at the low end of the range communicated in the Q2 results, and our EBIT margin now in a range between minus 1 and 0, as I also highlighted at the beginning. I believe we have taken a lot of necessary actions, including mechanisms to protect from the volatility of raw material prices, enhanced procurement strategies, and also additional efforts in cost-out programs and new technical features to compensate for this effect. And also, the LEAP program, which we started about a year ago, is continuously delivering positive results with the aim to achieve profitability in the onshore market again. We believe that these actions will let us reach our new guidance and also prepare for a better performance next year. We are also confident that we've taken all the necessary steps to get ready and benefit from the potential growth of renewables globally in the coming years. Many thanks for your attention, and now we would like to take your questions.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The Q&A session starts now. If you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. We kindly request that you limit your questions to one per turn. Please be informed that in order to assure audio quality, we recommend that all questions will be asked on landlines. The first question comes from Arsalan Obaidullah from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Just quickly, I just wanted to understand whether you're seeing in terms of in the near term, sort of any negative demand for onshore turbines coming from the rise of either raw material costs and accordingly turbine prices, as well as from the regulatory uncertainty in the US. Are you seeing anything there in the near term?
Thank you for the question. And of course, it's obvious that this question is in the room, but we don't see that at the moment. Our order entry in onshore is exactly as we expect it to be. Since about a year ago, it fits to our plans. And even though here and there, of course, negotiations take a little longer because we raise prices, we pass on raw material, and I think the whole industry is doing that at the moment, but generally we don't see that market slowing down. I think all the forecasts that we see and also that that the analysts, the market experts like Wood Mackenzie, don't show that.
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you. The next question comes from Vivek Midha from Citi. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much, everyone. Good morning. So again, on pricing, I just wanted to ask, you commented that you saw underlying like-for-like price increases in Q3. Could you maybe quantify that, if possible? Thank you.
Yeah, what we thanks Deepa for the question. Yes, we keep on raising prices, and it is driven by two effects. First, of course, the raw material effect that we already, as we explained in Q2, that we need to pass on because we cannot compensate it for that. So at the moment we raise prices, I would say an average in a range between 3 to 5% in onshore. And I think you assume that is where most of your question targets.
That's very helpful. And just to be clear, so you see that as enough to maintain benchmark gross margin. Thank you.
No, but of course, it goes hand in hand, and it's not the only measure. We raise prices, but at the same time, we introduce indexation clauses or raw material price clauses in the contracts that also prevent any further volatility in that hits us on top of the price increase. So it's a combination of both.
Understood. Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you. The next question comes from Akash Gupta from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hi, good morning, Andreas, for your time. If I start with the follow-up on ASP, how does this indexation mechanism work when it comes to the headline number? I mean, clearly your ASP of 0.63, we were all expecting it to pick up sequentially, but it came in flat. And I'm just wondering if you can explain if this is partly driven by indexation, where your realized ASP on sales could be higher than what you are booking an order entry. And then the second question I have is on offshore margins for the full year. Previously, you have been in the range of 8 to 10%. Can you indicate where you are likely to finish this year in this -1 to 0% group guidance? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Akash. First, it is, of course, very complicated, and I think we all know that, to translate the current activities then into the ASP, because the ASP is influenced by so many factors, let it be size of the turbine, regional distribution, scope. What we clearly do, and that goes in line with what I said earlier, we currently pass through these raw material clauses, and they're different in nature. For example, one pass-through clause is on tower steel. A lot of steel goes into every tower. We have a starting point for that escalation, and then we lock that in only at either when we sign the contract or when we order the tower steel. So there are even different methods dependent on the time frame of the project. But it doesn't translate at the moment already into an ASP as you would expect it. And nevertheless, I think I can clearly confirm what I said earlier. We pass that on. We include that now in every contract. We already did that in offshore since a long time. We introduced that when we saw the raw material prices increasing earlier this year. We started with that in February, March, but latest since April, May, we have that now in every contract. It simply does not translate yet into an ASP due to all the other effects that you have there. Sorry, and then I didn't fully understand your second question, but
Cash,
maybe Beatrice, if you...
Yes, thank you. Regarding your second question, if I understood it, is related to the offshore, you know, profitability throughout the year. And despite we are going to have, as we said, the change of the platform on Q4, and of course that will trigger, you know, the profitability down. The number that you said, you know, for offshore sounds, you know, reasonable to us. You know, it's a very strong year for offshore.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. The next question comes from Deepa Venkateswaran from Bernstein. Please go ahead.
thank you. I wanted to focus my question on the 5X. So, Andrea, if you can basically maybe tell us what is the timeline? I mean, where are you on the ramp up? And, you know, what are the milestones we should look forward to, for example, achieving serial production, et cetera? Because I think you highlighted that there's 2.7 gigawatts of orders. 1 gigawatt has been, you know, taken under the onerous contract. So just for the health of the remaining contract, so we can have some visibility. I was wondering if you can share some tangible details on your 5X turnaround. Thank you.
I'm happy to do so. I would like to split that answer and also the ramp up into maybe three major activities. I start with the technical track that is ongoing. We have installed the prototype, and the prototype will start operating in the next few weeks. We have installed the 155 and the 170 prototype, and this is then the final step of validating the technical side of that turbine. We are, of course, confident that we will get confirmed our expectations of the 5X, but nevertheless, that's always an important milestone, and we have to see how that goes. It also depends on the wind conditions of the prototype sites and so on. So that is the first track, the prototype and technical verification. Then with regards to the serial ramp-up that you were looking at or asking for, we have actually two separate ramp-up activities at the moment. One is for the, let's call it the European version of the 5X, where we have signed a number of projects in Scandinavia, where we are already producing the first zero series and then the serial machines that go into these projects. We started that production, and we will start shipping these turbines later this year. And then we have the separate ramp up. That is the one where most of the effect currently comes from. That's the Brazilian ramp up, because we decided at a very early stage to go in parallel into both markets. And here, the activities are now much better under control, despite of the profit impact that we had, because we are now tracking extremely close all the details of that ramp up, let it be contracts with sub-suppliers, readiness of the factory, readiness of the bill of material, and so on. We will start serial production of that machine after the European one. So all the learnings that from the European serial production startup, they can translate it into the Brazilian one. So these are the three major activities that are going on in that space.
Thank you. If I get it right, you've not tested the prototype, but you already started ramp up in Scandinavia. Is that how I interpret your second?
When you say ramp up, yes, it's correct. The prototype will start operating soon, but at the same time, we already started to produce the first machine, which is not completely unusual that you do the final technical validation. But nevertheless, and I think I highlighted that also during the preliminary results, we have an extremely ambitious time schedule with regards to the 5X in general, and therefore we have these activities going on in parallel.
Okay, so I suppose the update in November will give us a clear picture on where you are on 5X.
Definitely,
thank
because
you.
Then we will be further on the industrial ramp-up as well as on the technical.
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you. The next question comes from Supriya Subramanian from UBS. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for taking my question. I had a question a little bit more on near-term related to the charges taken. If I do the math on what's implied on in your guidance for the full year, it seems that we expect about 4.5% of negative margins in the fourth quarter as well, which would imply I'm guessing some further charges being booked in the fourth quarter. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on, one, is that sort of correct? And do you expect, is let's say, the revaluation of the backlog, the exercise on the revaluation of the backlog complete, and then beyond the fourth quarter, we should not expect any further charges? Or what are the risks that could lead to further charges being taken maybe into 2022 as well? Thank you.
Thank you for your question. Regarding the fourth quarter, there are two impacts that I highlight that we said before. Despite the very strong performance of our service and offshore, the profitability of both are really front-loaded throughout the year, and that's also impacting the Q4. Also, when we announced the preliminary results, we really highlight the impact of both, two things. Of course, we have the onerous provision trigger on Q3, but also the impact of the raw materials throughout the year, of course, has also the impact on Q1, just for the volume of 21 that we have foreseen in that implied guidance. If you ask me, have we considered additional, you know, onerous provision? As of today, we run the estimates, sorry, the onerous provision based on our best estimate in each of the periods. And, of course, we have covered some volatility that still is in the market. Regarding, you know, the risk for the coming years, as we highlighted, of course, is our role to strengthen the execution capabilities with, of course, you know, strengthen the processes, the quality of our resources, and also to mitigate the risk that, as we said, the projects are going to be stalled on 22 and 23. So, of course, by nature and being the 5X prototype, there are some risks that are open. And that's the reason, as we highlighted, we have strengthened processes, you know, resources, and also on the procurement side, our strategy with new indexation clauses, really mainly related on the onshore contracts to mitigate that risk on inflation and volatility of the raw materials. We also have strengthened, you know, kind of the back-to-back of on the supply chain with our suppliers to make sure that we mitigate that risk. So, and also on the commercial side, and strengthen the link between, you know, procurement and, of course, our salespeople. So that's what we are doing to try to mitigate any further impact on 22.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you. The next question comes from Sean McLaughlin from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my question. I wanted to dig into procurement. You're talking about an enhanced procurement strategy. So could you just give us a little bit of detail about what you're doing differently and also how much of procurement you've already done for your 2022 deliveries? Thank you.
Yes. The figures I signed with the last one, that, of course, you know, is the current view that we have, I mean, the current status that we have, is roughly we have covered 75% of the volume on financial hedges on copper, and the main impact that we have is mainly steel, and we have covered roughly 50% of the volume is already secure. The strategy that we follow in general is that volume and prices are secured really ahead, roughly ahead of the start of the year. Currently, due to the peak prices that we have, the group is avoiding to enter in long-term, you know, supply agreements. But at the same time, of course, we are trying to mitigate that, you know, with increased alignment and close cooperation with our strategic suppliers for the back-to-back coverage. Also looking for multiple sources, exploring also new materials that will substitute some of the raw materials that we are seeing high increase on price. Also, on the commercial side, as Andrea has mentioned, we are included mainly on the onshore contract mitigation clauses, mainly related to a steel tower that were not, you know, maybe concerned in the past, to limit, of course, the risk of for increasing, you know, volatile markets and then going trade tensions that we have. And as I said, you know, on the steel, you know, we have already covered 50% of the volume. We are working with the steel mills to secure volume and pricing with our key suppliers, and on the copper is nearly done. On the also logistics is also another challenge for the industry, and also, of course, we are working very hard on that front, closely monitoring the market, getting, you know, additional agreements with suppliers, for also analyzing, you know, long-term, you know, suppliers, and of course, leveraging on the partnership that we have with Siemens Energy to improve also our logistic capabilities. And so the combination of all that measures are the ones that has been put in place to mitigate the risk that, of course, we face as a sector.
Thank you. Thank you, Beatrice. That's super helpful. Can I just ask around offshore? Because I think you previously said that procurement, you know, was less of an issue with offshore. You had, let's say, indexation for much longer in offshore. But how should we think about procurement risks for offshore for 2022 and 2023, given the scale of input cost increases?
As we said, you know, of course, you know, because of the nature of the projects, those steel clauses were already in place. What we are trying to improve is even, you know, the clause on that coverage, because to try to mitigate from the notice to proceed to, of course, securing, you know, the volume on steel and gain, you know, really no timing with no coverage. So that's the back-to-back. Also very important for any single new project that has been or is being analyzed by the group is very important, apart from having, of course, the proposal on the project of the SBAs of those indexation clauses. As Andrea highlighted, we have strengthened the mechanism to make sure that whenever we analyze the profitability of a new project, we take into account all the new update, you know, cost in terms of where do we stand, as you asked me, on the steel, you know, coverage and prices, where do we stand on the copper, to avoid as well a double coverage, you know, because, of course, if we have already covered or hedged, you know, that volume, there is no need for that extra mitigation. So all in is now that process in place. We have redrafted the policies within the company and, as I said, strengthened the mechanism to make sure that all the new projects that we will analyze and if we approve those, it's because they imply profitability take into account the cost others or, you know, we are have the back-to-back. So we are looking for the back-to-back with the client, we are looking for the back-to-back with the supplier, and, of course, making sure that on the cost side, all the estimates are run with very, very updated information.
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you. The next question comes from Rajesh Singla from Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you, and good morning, everyone. So my question is on your average realized price in the onshore business. If my calculations are correct, then the price is around 0.55 million euro per megawatt in this quarter, which seems to be at all-time low level as compared to, if I compare it with your order book price, which was around 0.7 million euro per megawatt in your onshore business. So why there is a big gap between your average realized price versus the order book price? I think it has been happening for many quarters. So just wanted to have a bit more understanding, like what's going on there.
Yeah, thank you for the question, even though I have to admit it was a little hard to exactly follow your calculations, because what we do, and that is always what we share with you, is as a main indicator, even if that indicator's influence is by so many factors that the average selling price is stable. In my earlier answer, I already tried to explain that we raise our current offerings in various ways at the moment. At the same time, we, of course, also working on additional measures, not only just simply raising prices or passing on raw material effects, but also additional technical measures like increased AEP and additional value add that we clearly can provide quite a number of projects. That surely doesn't exactly answer your question, but it hopefully answers what activities we are taking.
No, basically my question was on the average realized price, not on the average order price, but average realized price when you book on the sales, your sales revenue by megawatt, what you sold during the quarter, basically in the revenue line. So that price, there is a very big gap in the order book price and the realized price.
Yeah, that is the best explanation I can at that short note or come up with is clearly it's also again the mix that we're currently installing. We still have a number of Indian projects of the 2 megawatt that I'm sure will influence that because we are realizing these projects at the moment. But I don't have a better explanation right now without having the chance to look at it into it deeper.
Sure, I will. I can send you. I will send you an email, so maybe you can have a look at it after the call. And
happy to of course respond. Christina will also support that to make sure that we really answer the question you ask. And sorry that I can't do that immediately.
Sure, no problem. And my question, another question would be on the Brazilian project. So you have booked a very large provision for these projects. So what kind of margin we can expect from these projects going into 2022-23?
The reason of the provision is as we follow ES 37, of course, is we have run, you know, on the profitability of calculation for those projects. And that's why, you know, we have allocated that, you know, provision on Q3. Of course, our aim, as we said, as those projects are going to be installed on 22 and 23, so just to answer your question, those projects are loss-making. That's the reason of the owner's provision with the estimates that we have as of today. As we said, so what is important for us is that we have taken all the actions to mitigate the coming risk of those projects, or the outstanding risk of those projects to be installed on 22 and 23, and also working hard with the team for looking for opportunities to mitigate those risks. But as of today, those projects in our books, you know, as per we have the owner's provision, they stand at 0%, you know, margin.
0%. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you. The next question comes from Mark Freshney from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hey, thank you for taking my questions. I have two questions. Firstly, to clarify on Q4, you know, you made the comment in the call 2 weeks ago that without the provision, without the issue with the G5X, you would be at the bottom of the margin guidance range, the old one of 3-5%. So that would seem to imply that there's another charge related to G5X Q4. Can you just confirm why the business will be loss making in Q4? And secondly, I mean, regarding the 3-year plan that Gamesa laid out a year ago, clearly, you know, you alluded on the call a couple of weeks ago to that plan potentially being pushed out a year. Clearly, the low profitability on G5X Brazil, as the previous question alluded to, will be low in the next couple of years. Do we get a new 3-year plan at some point? Thank you.
Yeah, Mark, thanks for both questions. First, let me try to answer your Q4 question. You were asking whether we see additional charges. We always, and I think we did that already in extensively also around Q2, we always said that the second half year would be impacted by a number of other effects, like the changeover in offshore that simply reduces the utilization in offshore and therefore reduces the offshore margin in the last quarter. Also, we had, I think, excellent results in service in the first half year that we cannot repeat. We mentioned that and called that normalization of the service. And so the positive effect that we had in the first half year do not repeat themselves in the second half. Whether we expect additional charges, as Beatrice said, we of course did the calculation of the onerous loss contracts with all the knowledge that we have currently, and that is also the mechanism that you have to apply. You have to put in everything and that you know into these charges, and therefore they hit Q3. So the Q4 is impacted by other means. Then with regards to the 3-year plan, the success of and the long-term profitability of Siemens Gamesa in total is, of course, heavily determined by service and offshore. And I think we continue to highlight we are on track in both areas. But, of course, we need onshore to turn around. That turnaround plan is now delayed. We had expected to be break even next year in 22. That we will not achieve anymore due to the effects that we now described extensively. But it remains, of course, our plan to turn that around. And we are currently working on the new three-year plan. But with all the volatility that we currently see, whether it's raw materials, whether that's the 5X ramp up and other effects, I think it's too early to already present that plan. We will, of course, as soon as we have one, we will do that in due course.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. The next question comes from Fernando Lafuente from Alantra Equities. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning. Two quick ones for me, please. The first one, not sure if you could give us a number, Beatriz, but I was wondering what is the proportion of the sales that you have for next year, 2022, that have been already closed so that you have no margin to modify them to reflect the cost of the increasing cost of raw materials? And the second question, it's on the ramp-up again, both of the 5X and the 11X. It's more a qualitative question. I wanted to understand, when you say extra cost or higher costs, where are these deviations? What are the nature of the deviations for these in these ramp-ups? Thank you.
Thank you, Fernando. Regarding the first question, we can say, and that's very important, that we have a very strong, backlog, and we have a very strong, coverage of the sales of next year. I will highlight that, offshore is nearly done, very important for us, of course. Onshore, we foresee that by the end of the year will be close to 90%, 90-ish. And then service, because of the nature of the business, we stand on roughly 70%, roughly coverage, because also, of course, we rely on other revenues coming to strengthen, the profitability of service. All in, very sound coverage of next year sales.
And sorry, Beatriz, a follow-up. So I understand that for offshore there is actually no risk of impact, no, on the increase in raw materials, as I understand from your comments that they have these clauses or they are more indexed to the potential variations. Services, I understand that it's pretty much the same, and the impact would come from onshore, right? Or these potential increases in material.
Yeah, let me explain, how we, of course, start running, the estimates based, of course, on the open, exposure that we have. Your statement is quite right, but I will say that, of course, offshore, what has been a standard, in the industry is, of course, to cover, have the coverage on the steel tower. And that's fully covered, no impact on of the backlog that we have. We are trying to mitigate other, impacts that, of course, is in the nature of the business that are not that much related to the steel tower, but also working with the clients on other, coverage on other, raw material impact. And also, of course, the logistics is very difficult to have the back-to-back. So that's why I meant that we are working on other mechanism to also mitigate that exposure. So it will be, of course, more exposure on the onshore, but of the offshore, because of the reason that I said, also there is an open exposure that is very much linked to the business. And that's the reason for all the action plan that we put in place.
Understand. Next question.
Thank you. The next question comes from Vivek Midha from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thanks very much for taking my follow-up. I know it's early in the year. You haven't given 2022 guidance, but based on what you're seeing this year, could you give us any comments as to how you see the absolute level of onshore EBIT developing going into next year relative to this year, particularly taking out the provisions you booked in Q3? Thank you.
Thank you, Vivek, for the question. But as I said, we expected that onshore will turn around next year in light of the impact that we in raw materials, the ramp up, and all the effects that we discussed now many times that will be delayed. We would not like to comment on the profitability of onshore as a separate business for 22. We of course committed and convinced that onshore is an integral part of SGRE. We need to make onshore profitable, and we are working on numerous plans. I believe also we make progress in many areas. Of course, this quarter is a severe setback, but on the other hand, we continue to work on that. I stressed also that the LEAP program with huge productivity gains unfortunately compensated by the effects that we now saw. But otherwise, we stay committed to onshore. We also stay committed to the long-term vision of our business with a target margin of 8 to 10%. So overall, I believe we have a setback, but on the other end, we have taken so many actions, including industry-wide actions, that we stay committed and confirm that.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you, Andreas. We are running out of time, but we are going to take one last question.
Thank you. The next question comes from Sebastian Golda from Commerzbank. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. It's a more on a higher level view, to be honest. I'm still a bit puzzled with everything that we heard with the quarter three cost overrun and the onerous contract. So I would be really interested in what you are changing with regard to the risk management in the firm and onshore in particular, obviously. And I'm stressing this point as we have seen the cost overrun from Scandinavia last year, which came as a result of rather thin margins versus accepting apparently too high risk. Now we are seeing these onerous contract provisions, I think overall similar values, so about 800 billion revenues eventually, 200 to 250 million of the cost overruns. And the root cause seems to be sort of the same. It's again thin margins, an ambitious ramp-up schedule comes on top, and that's what you stated yourself on the call around the pre-release. So, and while I understand the quotations really that those took place under the prior management, I'm quite frankly really puzzled that after the management change mid and end 2020, that there hasn't been a proper review of any eventual project risks that are related to the onshore business. So that's barely acceptable, to be honest. And I leave it there, and I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, thank you, Sebastian, for the question, and of course I understand your reaction. On the but nevertheless, I would like to highlight that clearly we are much more careful in taking on projects. Of course, the current hit counters my argument, but we are much more stringent in reviewing projects. In Brazil, I think it's the combination of several effects that hit us there. The complex localization structure that you have to have in Brazil, the extremely fast development schedule that we had for the 5X, and then raw material price hikes that came at the same time. Indeed, we did not catch that as we would have liked to do that. On the other hand, we also are currently going much more and much deeper and much more careful into each and every contract. I get always, last time I got the question, and I'm sure that will come this time as well, why is your onshore order entry not higher? Because we are much more careful, and we also taking actions in various ways. I talked about price hikes, additional risk margin in all the projects. So I think we do a lot, and over time, I expect also that this pays off.
As a quick follow-up to this one, can I just ask how we should think structurally about the onshore business? So leaving really all the Wood Mackenzie estimates aside, but obviously you're coming from an 8-gigawatt run rate. It apparently seems you are rather, I don't know, shrinking the business to about 6 gigawatts or so. So what is sort of the kind of comfort level to then have a sort of clean sheet, and from there we can eventually return to growth in that business?
Yeah, but that is what we already said last year in the Capital Market Day. We would not like to continue with what we did beforehand, that we scale ourselves or volume ourselves out of the situation. We first need to stabilize the business, and unfortunately the last quarter confirms that further stabilization activities are needed. And from that point of view, that we have a relatively stable or flat onshore market for the next few years. We also, I think, take a country like India, where we had a severe ramp down. We completely changed our business model there. We introduced a new turbine, so we're also making progress in a number of areas of the onshore turnaround, but on that simply needs to continue and needs also to cover then the complete onshore business. And once we fully stabilize that along the volumes that you also said, 6-7 gigawatts per year, I think then we expect to be ready for the ramp up that is expected after 24.
Okay, it's going to be obviously a tough one, I think. Obviously, other competitors are catching up, and they are really on the fast track, obviously. So that's the nucleus of the question at the end of the day, to what extent it's then wise to just right-size and try to hope for the best that can come after. I see the point, but at the same time, see this environment is very dynamic.
Okay. Yeah, but first, I hope is not a plan, and we are clearly doing more than just hoping. We have the various plans in place, and it goes exactly along the structure that we described. We have to be even more careful in taking on contracts, which we, I think, strengthen again. Now, after we see this impact, we have to stabilize the 5X. The 5X will be our major contributor. We reduce our complexity. We've reorganized onshore exactly as we said. We are progressing with that. We are also adjusting our scale to a smaller scale to be ready for the ramp up. I think we follow all of these plans as we started them about a year ago, and we need to see that they, of course, come to full fruition. But it's more than hope.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Andreas. Thank you, everybody. I think with this, we are going to conclude the call.
Thank you very much for attending the call, and, of course, happy to follow up with any questions that you might have. Thank you, everyone.